your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Killer Serials, the top podcast in serial television podcasting.
Believe it.
Yeah, we're going to live into that reality, baby. I'm Tony Jones.
Ryan Parker.
We talk about serial TV shows, particularly interested in the faith, spirituality, truth, and meaning angle. So we try to pick serials that deal with that. And I think we have picked one right now that is killer.
I don't know that we're going to find a better one. Well, I bring that back. Preacher's still coming out. This one's really good, though. I mean, this is right in our wheelhouse, it feels like. And somebody it just helps. What?
There are going to be people killed in this, I have a feeling.
Oh, gosh. It just, and it feels, not only is it kind of right in our wheelhouse with these themes that we are, I think, personally attracted to, it also helps that it's just a damn good show. Like, it's really well made, well acted, and have we said what the show is?
No, it's The Path. The show is The Path. It's on Hulu, which, you know, would be a whole podcast in and of itself, that here we got, you know, original content from a streaming service. That I watch through my Roku and you watch through your Apple TV or whatever. It's not.
And
even
then there's, the interesting way in which Hulu is releasing The Path, which is they're doing one episode each Wednesday rather than dumping everything on us for binge watching. And I actually prefer it, I think.
Yeah, they did two episodes to launch it, and now they're doing one a week. So we're covering the first two.
And then we'll be right on track next week. To cover one episode at a time after we get three and four next week.
Yeah, so it's really such an interesting thing. I just want to start by agreeing with you that I think it's really well made. First of all, it's excellent acting all the way around. There's nobody who's been, you know, you might argue in the last series we tackled that John Travolta and Nathan Lane and some other people high-profile casting decisions that brought some interest to the series. The only high-profile actor in this series is Aaron Paul, who was, of course, in Breaking Bad and was freaking brilliant in that. But, yeah. You know, the show is, it's like the sets are really well done. It's well filmed. It's well acted. It doesn't seem cheesy or chintzy in any way, I think. It's done very well.
Why don't you give us a brief synopsis of what the show's about? I mean, what at least we can garner in these first two episodes, and then we could kind of jump in on some what might be some running themes throughout, or certainly the themes in the first two episodes.
The Path is about a group that they internally they call a movement, and externally they're referred to as a cult. And we only get this in the first couple of episodes from a passing mention from a journalist and a very beginnings of interest in the group from the FBI. They seem to be a group that was probably founded in the 70s, and their founder is still alive, although we find out
it's a complicated existence. Let's say that.
Yeah, late in the first episode that he's alive, maybe in name only.
And let's don't say more than that.
It's being run by his right-hand man, Cal Roberts. It seems to have been founded in kind of the, as best we can gather, kind of, it's referred to a couple times as like a coming out of the hippie movement, kind of, free love, kind of drug use isn't necessarily frowned upon because we see one of the older members of the group smoking pot.
Constantly smoking pot, yeah.
Right. And then we've got this interesting, at the center of the show is a married couple. Mm-hmm. And the wife grew up in in this Meyerist movement. The founder's name is Steve Meyer, and so they're called the Meyerists, and they're located, headquartered in upstate New York, and then they also have kind of a satellite location in Cusco, Peru. And so at the center is this married couple, as I said, and Sarah, the wife, grew up in Meyerism. It's her dad who's smoking pot and kind of hanging around as kind of a senior member, although he refers to himself as not having climbed that far up on the rungs.
Yeah, well, when you're high, I think it limits any sort of physical activity.
Yeah, and then Eddie Lane, played by Aaron Paul, he's a convert who's, we find out early on, his brother committed suicide, and it was in this following this crisis in his life that he converted to Meyerism, or was found by the Meyerists, because we see him giving his testimony. And this is, I guess, where we can land on one of the first points of conversation. He's giving his testimony about halfway through episode one. He breaks down in the middle of it, and his testimony is so well known by Cal, the current leader of the movement, that Cal steps in and basically finishes giving Eddie's testimony for him in front of these new converts, which is so fascinating. There's so many resonant points for those of us who've grown up in religion to know, like, this dramatic testimony as setting the table for the show, I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, and I feel like just one quick thing before we dig into that, because that is a good starting point, is that as he's giving his testimony, he's remembering the show begins with his return from Cusco, Peru, where he had gone for a retreat, and he has a very traumatic experience on that retreat that kind of leads to a crisis of faith for him, which is another backbone for the show. And so the first two episodes are, and maybe the rest of the show, is born out of Eddie's crisis of faith. And so, I think that kind of gets all that we need to say about a kind of a summary of the show. But
except that if you go into the show and you think, oh, this is about a fundamentalist cult, this is like Westboro Baptist,
It's way not, more than that.
It's not. It's way more complex than that. And it's also, for instance, the drug use, which is also part of Eddie's kind of vision quest thing that he does in Peru and leads to this vision that's so unsettling for him. Drugs are a part of that, too. So, but there is also open talk about God and truth and light. A lot of the same kind of, linguistic patterns that you see in a lot of conservative religious movements.
And the writers are quick to point out that this group and the show is not a stand-in for Scientology either, or other communities like that. And one of the things that I found myself doing, and we're going to be talking about this throughout the rest of this series, is I believe if you're watching The Path and it doesn't at least lead to one or two, and hopefully more, questions about, if you have one, your own faith tradition and involvement in a religious community, then I don't really think you're watching the show right. Because I think the show is saying more about just belief in general rather than it is trying to critique or expose cult identity.
Yeah, there are some, I want to say, like, as an overarching thing, that I see some points of resonance with Big Love, which was another show that dealt with some of these same things, where you
That's
had
a good point.
The husband was kind of a lifelong believer in polygamy, and then he kind of recruits his wife out of Mormonism, his first wife, when she has breast cancer. He convinces her that they should have more wives, and she kind of converts to this way of thinking and is kind of an adult convert to it. So you've got some of those same points of friction. And then you've also, similarly, their oldest son is a real true believer and wants to also be a polygamist. And you've got Eddie and Sarah's son, Hawk, wants to drop out of high school and join the movement full time.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want to finish high school. And kind of dad, who comes out of the secular world, is like, no, you got to stay in high school till you're 16. And mom and grandpa, who are lifelong members of the Myerist movement, are ready to kind of bend the rules to let the son, you know, jump ship and join the movement. So you've got some of these family dynamics and how religion really plays differently in the mind of each family member. You know what I mean? Like they're each dealing with what's going on.
It's not monolithic.
It's not monolithic, and they're not robots. Each one of them is negotiating their relationship with the Myerist movement and with the
each
other independently. And this is really the heart of the conflict at the beginning of the show is Eddie. I'll just say this and toss you this softball. Eddie is having doubts.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's kind of what launches the narrative from the first episode is that Eddie is having doubts.
Yeah. And how do we handle doubts in faith communities? And there, you know, it's hard to say why these doubts are taking place without giving what I think is a great cliffhanger in the pilot or the first episode away. So one of the things I want to say doubts, but I want to put that in context of, if you're watching it or you're going to watch it, three words should jump out at you based on the first two episodes. And they're used over and over and over again. They're pain, truth, and the past. And I use past to really summarize this kind of longing to return to some idealized version of existence, whether that be the Garden of Eden, because they consistently refer to a garden, or if it is a past before we have our doubts, before there are those conflicts of faith when all things were held together. Mm-hmm. So all of these characters in their own way, we might not say they have doubts, but there are conflicts. And so some of that conflict is pain from a past life. They've been abused physically or sexually or verbally, whatever their pain might be. There's this desire to do away with it. And in doing so, or their quest for truth is simultaneously an attempt to deal with the pain of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And then that notion of the past is working through with that truth, working through their pain to get to some sort of, kind of paradise. I think all of that can be found in all faiths, or none at all in some sort of, self-help way. I found myself watching the show, and every time they talk about pain, I'm like, you guys just need to get together as a group and watch Inside Out and the Pixar movie and then just deal with your shit. Like, pain is a part of life. It can't be escaped. It can't be just kind of repressed or put away, which is really what it feels like these people are trying to do. They're not trying to authentically deal with it. They're trying to box it up, put it away, or just completely dismiss it. And that just doesn't seem like a very holistic way to live.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And it's interesting that you note that the showrunners are trying to say, hey, this really isn't about Scientology. In so many ways, it's not about Scientology because it comes from a very different place of Scientology. And yet, having recently watched the masterful documentary Going Clear, there is something in Scientology that's obviously very attractive to the people who get involved in that system. That is, we can fix the broken parts of your past. And so, from the machine that the people put on themselves, to the, the 14 days that happen, in episode 2, there's in Scientology, it's called auditing. And in the Myrist movement, there's a similar, like, we can, the reason you're unhappy is your past. If we do this very intense auditing or raking over the coals of your past, we can help you overcome those painful elements of your past. And you know, that's, it's the promise of let us fix your past that's so attractive to a guy like Eddie, who's converted to Myerism from a difficult life. You know what I'm saying? And so, and what's so, and here's something that's so interesting that goes by just in passing, when in the second episode, when Eddie and Sarah are working on what's become a real rupture in their marriage, and he has to deal with his past and mistakes he's made, some in the recent past and some in the distant past. And she says, I'm perfect. Like, she says, I haven't made any mistakes. And so there's this belief that because she was born into the movement, she has nothing to regret, and she doesn't have to, you know, go through this. Although it does show her with the machine, she puts the machine on herself.
Yeah.
But, you know,
which is a kind of a nod to Scientology.
Oh, for sure. But like she has the, this e-meter. She doesn't have any. Yeah, exactly. But she doesn't have anything to fix. And so you start to see right there something about the fact that he has a past secular life and he's still atoning for that. And she's been in this religious movement her entire life. And so because of the theology of this movement, she really doesn't have anything to atone for.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think it's also getting at, although it's about the two of them, and there's a detail that we can't bring up about what he's forced to kind of atone for and whether or not anything actually happened. The point that you're bringing up applies to all of the characters in the movement. And it really gets at the different ways I think people are part of faith communities in general, right? So a lot of people, especially when you grow up in the South, or at least, you know, 20 years ago, a lot of people just went to church because they were kind of born into it, right? Yeah. And they never, and they maintained their Christian identity, never having really considered it. And so seriously considered it. So people keep saying, you know, it was always like, I chose Jesus. Well, not really, because you never really weighed the option between Buddha and Jesus, so to speak.
Right.
And that shapes the way you think about your own faith and the way you interact with other people or people of other faiths. And then you have characters in the movement who are like Eddie, who are converted to it. But even then, you can break that down, right? They come to it at a place of a great trauma or brokenness. Mm-hmm. Or they've been gently welcomed into it and kind of loved into the community. And you may or may not see that take place in subsequent episodes with Eddie's son and this girl at school.
Right.
You can start to see a more loving relationship and welcoming that takes place there.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, of course, welcoming people into the movement, it's one of the threads that's running through the show. The cold intro or whatever they call it of the show.
The cold open.
Open is after a tornado, and they almost abduct people into the movement, and then later they're like at Central Park and they're trying to kind of woo people into the movement. So there's this like, there's this almost cult-like initiation, which raises the eyebrows of the FBI for the tornado stuff. But then there's this very traditional, like, there's a church van, they set up a booth in Central Park, and they're basically sharing the love of God with people, which is this very traditional mode of evangelism.
Yeah, and that's a good point to clarify about the abduction, because that is something that's in the show that kind of, again, points to more kind of cultish aspects, and especially to abduct people in those moments where they're kind of they're doubly violated, right?
Yeah,
they've
so
experienced
a
trauma, and then now they're thrust into this system. But you know, even that, but especially the kind of more loving, hospitable means, this really put me in mind of your old good friend Phyllis Tickle,
mm-hmm.
who somebody else may have said it, but I always think about her when I think about things like this. And she pointed out that dichotomy of becoming part of a faith community. And I think what a lot of us grew up in was the process that maybe seemed more traditional, which is you believe in something, you behave accordingly, and then you belong to that community, mm-hmm. right? Where she challenged that, at least when I spoke with her, she said, you know, really the way that it works is you belong somewhere, you belong to a community, you begin to behave like that community, and then you finally believe in the theological underpinnings in that community.
Yeah.
And I really think the tension is on display here about between those two means of believing and belonging.
Yeah.
And you can start to see it in some of the characters who are belonging first, and they're going to gradually... they might gradually grow to believe, right? I forget, is it Sean, the African-American character who Mary it kind of partners with,
mm-hmm.
Over time? He talked about losing his brother, and then the community enveloped him, and then he's behaving. Now, you know, it complicates things when we talk about belief with the Myers movement, because very much like Scientology, they have levels that you have to work your way through.
You have to climb a ladder.
A ladder. And there's not a monetary thing here. But I think, where they complicate that still is that it's not just a matter of paying for it.
No, right? nor is it a matter of being around for a long time, because Sarah's dad, in a meeting toward the end of episode 2, he's in a meeting with two people who are younger than him. One of them is his daughter, and he says, you two are much higher up the ladder than me. So
seem to care.
No, he's been in the that's right. He's been in the movement his whole life, or a long time. She's his daughter, and yet she's higher up the rungs than him. So here's I just want to put that in parallel with one other thing before we go, and that's
great.
I think an interesting theme. So we've been talking a lot about the individuals, right? The struggles in this marriage between someone who converted and someone who's born into it, and these new converts and things like this. And then there's this one other element that's more of a macro element for the Myerist movement that comes out toward the end of episode 2, and that is the question, should we go legit? And that's even this meeting I'm talking about, it's a question of, do we go legit? We've always avoided the media.
Oh,
we've
right.
always avoided scrutiny, and you know, that's the traditional message, but now this younger generation of leadership comes along, and the one guy, but he gets other people on board with him and says, this is our moment. Let's come out of the shadows. Let's go legit. And, you know, you think about Scientology trying to go legit. I'll tell you that the Community of Jesus, where I've been to visit a couple times on Cape Cod, they run Paraclete Press. You know, they started as almost a cult of charismatic Episcopalians, and they worked really hard to go legit. I remember,
and by legit, you mean moving into more into the mainstream.
Yeah. Saying like, we're not a cult. We're really not a cult. Like we're just a sect or a branch of Christianity. The same thing happened with the Church of God in Pasadena when I was at Fuller, and their headquarters, Worldwide Church of God, they tried to go legit. The Reorganized Church of Latter-day Saints changed their names to Community of Joy because they wanted to go legit. We're not Mormons. We're traditional Christians. And
I think
this is like we've seen this happen in our lifetime. These groups that have been called cults, and that you and I grew up with our youth pastor, you know, with Larson's Book of Cults my youth pastor had that on his shelf, Larson's Book of Cults. And I guarantee you all those things were in there. And now they try to say we're legit. And I know even some of these organizations, like they've gone to evangelicals like the Billy Graham Association and said, here's our theology. Please call us legit.
Yeah. Well, and I think the decision in the series to make that move further into the mainstream, and it's not really giving much away. I mean, I confess that I've already watched the third episode, but that accompanying that is this very dangerous cult of personality where the cult is becoming more about one of the particular characters' personality, right? And you can actually see that from the very beginning, the way people gravitate towards Cal. Mm-hmm. Where it's maybe not just all about the movement. So, and again, it's even about is it Stephen, who is the man in Peru, has obviously this godlike they attribute to him this kind of godlike status. So mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how their attempt to, or at least Cal's attempt to bring them further along in kind of society impacts the community.
Yeah, well, I think you and I can agree from what we said at the very beginning. Not only is the people, the showrunner and the producers and stuff, they know what they're doing, and you and I did a little research before recording that there's some theater background, and you can kind of see that in the solid acting and casting and stuff. But also, they obviously understand religious movements. You know, these are people who have enough experience that you and I are finding threads and themes that we've experienced in the real world in our lives and seen, you know, groups that have done this.
We joked about wanting to get Aaron Paul on the podcast. But now I think I'm more interested in getting the creator and writers on here to talk about that whole process. And I want to, and in part, I want to make a recommendation to people if they're nerdy enough, is that if people are really into this show, I think as much as you and I are, and are planning on getting into it, or catching up, or are eagerly waiting that next episode on Wednesday, it's kind of this serendipitous thing where I've been reading this book that it really feels like a companion piece, or that it could be a good conversation partner with the series. And I'll put a link to it in the description of this episode. But the book is called On Purpose, How We Create the Meaning of Life, by a guy, and I'm going to struggle with his last name, but he's a sociology professor at Baylor, Paul Fries. I guess you would say Froese. And man, it felt like every chapter he's making these great points about not how I can read this book and find my purpose in life, but it's more of an academic study about how people make meaning in life. And he's looking at it politically, religiously, culturally, and it's almost every page even, there's something that kind of resonates with the show, or the show is echoing that. So again, just to say, it feels like this is a fairly well-researched show, or that at least the people who are behind it, writing it, producing it, have thought maybe a little bit more deeply about it than we might have expected. Yeah. So I'll put a link to that in the podcast.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, even I'll tell you that even some of these groups I know have outposts in South America. I mean, that's how.
Sure.
That's how well I'd be really fascinated to talk to the creators, and maybe we can throw out an invitation to them. But anyway, it's a great show. We really encourage everybody to watch it, and we'll be back now coming up with two more. We'll hit episodes 3 and 4 in our next show, and then we'll
maybe later this week,
maybe later this week, and then we'll be on, and we'd love to hear from people. Tweet at us, or
try to get up on iTunes so you can subscribe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, thanks.
All right,
Tony,
killer cereals. Thanks, this one's a great one.
Eddie, when you came to us, what did you find?
Home.
The future is coming.
poverty, political instability, terrorism. Everything we know will collapse.
I don't want to live for this moment. I want to live forever in the garden that we are creating here together.
What happened on your retreat?
What do you mean?
You've been acting distant since you got back.
You need to know you are everything to me.
Looking into the Myers movement.
I'm putting them on cold watch.
How about you tell me something so I know that this isn't a trap?
We don't hurt people.
You sure about that?
We who follow this path, we struggle with our relationship with the outside world. If darkness falls,
we are light.
I mean, they're gonna blow up my life because of something I don't even know, but I really saw.
You're nothing! You're nobody!
We're telling you to move to this side.
I can walk out on the street and make people believe.
With scarves of red tied round their throats to keep their little heads from falling in the snow. And I turn round and there you go. And Michael, you would fall and turn the white snow red as strobe.